much for listening. My name is Matt Williams. Thank you for joining us. If you haven't already, go over to crosspolitic.com, become a member, come alongside of us and support us as we proclaim the Lordship of Jesus in every area of life. Today, we are going to talk about MVPs. The two reasons I want to talk about MVPs is one, because they are an incredibly effective business strategy for you to use if you are thinking of starting a business. And we'll get into the details of that in a little bit. But mainly, it's because it allows you to limit cost. Second reason I want to talk about it is because companies, big companies that I've worked for, have started catching on to this tech craze. We've been talking a lot about how technology and just the transformation of technology is taking over in every industry, and it's causing disruption and all that stuff. So big businesses are starting to catch on, and one of the ways they're doing that is just picking up the buzzwords like an MVP, and they're not really sure what it means. And it turns out that they start doing something that's completely not an MVP, but they call it an MVP, and it gets really confusing. So I just want to clarify that, make sure that we on How to Build a Tent community understand what an MVP is and how to effectively roll out that strategy, so we don't make those same mistakes. Because what I find is in big business is when they say MVP, what they mean is they want something built quickly, they want it fast, and they want it to satisfy the requirements of everybody in the company. And that's not what an MVP is. That just becomes a version one of a product that they roll out. I love the definition of what an MVP actually is from Techopedia. And they define it this way: a minimum viable product is the most pared down version of a product that can still be released. An MVP has three key characteristics. It has enough value that people are willing to use it or buy it initially. Two, it demonstrates enough future benefit to retain early adopters. And three, it provides a feedback loop to guide future development. And then it goes on. The catch to this development technique is that it assumes that early adopters can see the vision or promise of the final product and provide the valuable feedback needed to guide developers forward. And I love this definition because it makes the MVP more than just the product itself. It's a business strategy. It's a mindset. It's how you think as an agile startup company. A great example of an MVP could be Facebook. We all know Facebook. Some of us have used it and don't use it anymore. Some of us still do. Some of us have an account, but haven't logged in and who knows how long. Facebook started out as an MVP with just Harvard, where Mark Zuckerberg was going to school. It had very limited features. You could search for people at your school. You could find out who's in your class. And you can look up your friends of friends. And you can also see the visualizations of your network. So you can see pictures and things like that. It provides value to the target audience, right? It would be something that the people at Harvard could find value in. They'll see who's in their classes and see who's hanging out with who. And even just the most limited, stripped down version of Facebook when it very first started had some value to it. It was simple and it provided a foundation for the future for people that started using it, early adopters, which are people who are willing to try new things that are clunky, that might have bugs in it and things like that, but just love trying the new thing. Those are early adopters. And people, those early adopters could see the vision because there were other social media sites out there. Remember MySpace? Those early adopters were able to see the vision. And now Facebook is what it is today. And to just carry on this example, to kind of explain to you what some big businesses are doing, and if you are working for one of those big businesses that you can be on the lookout for, is the idea of something like Facebook is pitched. Let's just say that Mark is coming to his company that he works for. He doesn't go to Harvard, but he works for your big corporation. And he's like, I have this great idea for a social network for our company. We can see who's on whose team. We could collaborate and all this good stuff. And the people that he pitched to from all the different divisions in the company are like, oh, that is such a great idea. you know, and then they start adding on to it. Oh, yeah, but for us to want to use this product, the media division, they want to post live videos. Or the finance department wants to be able to send cash from department to department and to manage your financial statements on there. And the marketing department wants to run ads to the public on it. And everyone starts having their own agenda to fit their specific needs on this product. They'll say MVP and they'll mean all of these requirements that we need, that you don't need, that you just really want, but we just need it really fast. And that's not what an MVP is, as we have covered. That's just a version one of a big program that a company rolls out. So be aware of that. If you are truly, as a big business, trying to incorporate an MVP, you need to be aware of everyone who's in on it, who is a stakeholder, getting everything they want in the beginning. It's going to take a lot of politics. It's going to take a lot of negotiation and smooth talking to not give everyone what they want and give one person what they want first and then second and third. You almost have to have a rollout strategy of which department, which division, however it makes sense for your company, to use the platform first, and then you can build on it from there. So one of the big benefits besides the cost savings of an MVP, because you don't have to spend as much money rolling out the MVP. It was really cheap to build the original Facebook compared to today, where you can do all of those requirements that are fictitious business required, right? You can send money, you can stream videos, you can run ads. Those are all things that they were able to grow into and innovate to down the road, which is really expensive, but they could justify it with where they were at as a company, opposed to day one, not sure if Facebook was gonna take off, putting all this money into it and causing a big risk of it just not working, getting too complicated too fast, not appealing to users. And the more money put in, the higher risk, the more liability it is. You don't have to deal with all that when you start out with an MVP. So besides all of that, it's also very flexible, because the whole premise of an MVP is you're getting it into users' hands as quick as possible. And this is a great asset for small businesses, for people who don't have lots of money to do market research ahead of time, is you get an idea and you build it out to what you think is the core value proposition, and you get it to a point where you believe it can provide value to those early adopters. And then you incentivize those early adopters to continue to buy in and to give you feedback and work with you into that vision. And again, the definition that we read about the MVP makes it important for the end users to understand where this thing can go. And so you need to do a good job of communicating that vision to them. And almost like a vendor relationship, where you are incentivizing them, you're working with them, you're interacting with them, you may even have meetings with them and just be seeing how they interact with the product, and you're getting feedback and critiquing it based on what they say to get it to that ultimate vision. It's a very lean, agile way, cost-effective way for you to start a business. I highly encourage it. Another point that I would strongly recommend is, before you start, is to lay out KPIs. And this will be helpful if you go back and listen to our goals episode, where you lay out what are success factors and how are you going to measure those, and how long and over what period of time are you going to give yourself to accomplish that. This is going to allow you to fail fast if you need to. You can build out your product, get it out there, and you can see if your product is doing well, if the market finds a need for it, if there's users that are enthusiastic about it, however you are going to measure it, with sales or whatnot. And you will have, before you even go into it, the measurements that you have to hit, the benchmarks that you have to hit. And it is important to do that beforehand, because what happens is you think you have a great idea. Hopefully you've done some market research before you started developing the product, but you start developing the product, you get into it, you're pouring your life into this thing, and you get so attached to it, you can't let it go. And those measurements, those KPIs that you're building in the moment while you're doing the business, you start moving the goalposts, and you're like, oh, I'll give myself 6 more months. Oh, I'll give myself a year. Or I'll just put in another $20,000 or $100,000, whatever it is. So I would strongly recommend putting those KPIs beforehand, before you get too connected, where you can think the clearest and then make that decision. Because a lot of businesses are going to fail. A lot of your ideas are not going to work out And the goal is not to be perfect and successful in every venture, but it's to get out of the failed ventures as fast as possible. You want to figure out something's not going to work as fast as possible because you can recover, save up, and use whatever remaining resources for the next thing. And you just keep going and going. And we've talked about this before. Failure is part of the success cycle. It's those failures are going to teach you how to do it better next time. So don't be afraid of failure, embrace it. And don't be too quick to leave. You need to have some perseverance and things like that. But have those KPIs ahead of time so you can see from an objective standpoint as much as possible if this is working or not, and you can continue to innovate and things like that. There's one more warning I want to say, and this is for small businesses working with big businesses. And there's some things that can happen without you really knowing it. And this has happened to me before, I'll be honest, is I will have a company and I'm so desperate for sales that I'll start selling to a big business. And what happens is that big business can become such a big percentage of your customer base that they own your company without you selling the company to them. And what I mean by that is they become such a large percentage of your sales that you start tailoring and critiquing the whole platform to them. And you start doing their request, their change request. They want new features. You give them their features that they want. And sooner or later, you start to realize your product is only useful to that company. And you just do it because they give you so much money. Remember, whoever has the money has the power. And that could be a really subtle creep. So you want to diversify your customer base like you diversify your portfolio, because you can just like kind of creep into that situation, and it's a really bad situation to be in because the big companies know that they have control over you and you don't want it to be that as much as possible. And the way to fight against that is by diversifying your customer base. And the last thing is, the last warning I want to give you while working with big businesses, if you're a smaller business, is be careful with how much you change your platform and you add features for that one company, because the same thing can happen is you can be devoting resources away from your strategy as a business and be putting it towards that big customer. And that same thing can happen is that you are taking away from the strategy that you've laid out for your business to be successful and to add value to multiple customers. And you can find yourself innovating and critiquing your platform where it's not useful to anybody else. So be careful with how much of your customer base or how much of your customers is one company. You want to diversify. And then also be careful with how many updates and features that you add for one company. I know it's easy. You say like, oh, I want to provide the best customer service. I'll do whatever the customer says. But you need to weigh the pros and cons, because remember, we all have limited resources and you need to deploy them the most effectively to accommodate your vision of what you have. And oftentimes your vision isn't to provide value to only one company, it's to multiple companies. Now, if your company is failing and you're desperate and you have that one customer, then do whatever they want. What do you have to lose? But if you have a long-term strategy, your business is healthy, those are just two traps that I've seen small businesses do or step into without really consciously making that decision when working with a big customer. Okay, I hope that really helped. Please reach out to me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, How to Build a Tent, YouTube, Periscope. And it's like there's so many nowadays. You can email me, matt@howtobuildatent.com, because I would love to hear from you. I'm praying for you guys. And I get to pray for the people that reach out to me specifically when they come to mind. And I can just pray for the rest of you generally. But I would love to hear your story, hear what you're going through, so I can just pray for you. Prayer is such a powerful thing. God is real. He's active. He's working in our lives. So that would be just something really great. I'd love to hear from you guys so I can pray for you more specifically. And with that, we'll talk to you next time. God bless.